Hello, and welcome to Message in the Middle with Marianne. We all know that life is hard, right? It's messy, it's unpredictable, but it can be wonderful all at the same time. My hope is that we can take a deep dive into self-development topics and explore life's lessons through book clubs, conversations, and interviews. And together, we can uncover the lessons that others have already learned to help us navigate this crazy, wonderful ride called life. Hello and welcome to Message in the Middle. I'm your host, Marianne, and today I'm bringing you someone who's focused on helping women ditch diet culture and thrive beyond size. With me today is Dr. Michelle Tubman. Dr. Tubman is a physician specializing in both emergency and obesity medicine and has additional training in nutrition, eating psychology, and coaching. She's the host of the Thrive Beyond Size podcast and the owner of Weza Health Coaching, where the focus is health, happiness, and peace around food, regardless of your size. Dr. Tubman, thank you so much for joining me today.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
So I was hoping you could get us started by sharing a little bit about your own journey, what brought you into this space and made you so passionate about helping women of any size.
Yes, of course. Well, I think like many people who work in this space, it was fueled by my own journey and my own struggles with my body and my weight. So I have struggled with weight my entire adult life, maybe even starting kind of as a teenager, preteen. And it's kind of been the dominating factor. Everything comes back to my weight, right? There are periods of my life I don't have any photos because I would evade the camera, right? And so, you know, in one way or another, my weight, or at least my perceptions about my weight, have really dominated my life. And you know, you mentioned in the bio that I'm a physician. I'm actually triple board certified in emergency obesity and lifestyle medicine. I have a million other certifications. And a lot of the reason for that is because I felt I needed to overcompensate for my fatness.
I feel that.
Right. And so during the pandemic, as an emergency physician, of course, that time was, you know, a little stressful and unfun for all of us, but really more so, I think, in the emergency department. And I had a decision to make, right? I could either get swallowed up in the fear and the stress of all of this, or I could use, you know, the downtime that I had to a healthier purpose. And so I decided that I was going to focus on my health. And at the time, for me, that meant losing weight. And so in the process of me doing research and, you know, figuring out what I needed to do to finally solve my weight problem, I discovered coaching and was so impressed by coaching that I went on to become a certified coach as well to help other women with their weight. But then something unexpected happened. I was coaching women and feeling so much dis-ease. Like it was just really uncomfortable and I couldn't figure out why. And I didn't feel comfortable applying what I was teaching in my own life. And it made no sense to me intellectually because I had created this beautiful lifestyle change program, right? And everything was science-based and medically sound. And like, there's no reason why I should have felt uncomfortable with this. And, you know, so I did what doctors do. I went and did more education. And that's when I became certified, board certified in obesity medicine, because I thought if I went and actually got more medical training in this area, I would figure out the missing piece and I'd feel better about all of this. And really the opposite happened. So what I learned in that medical training was the horrific failure rate of diets over the long term, the tremendous amount of harm dieting causes, how dieting induces eating disorders in many people. And I learned really about how prevalent shaming based on weight and the anti-fat biases in our culture in general, but in particular within our healthcare system. And that really threw me for a loop, right? I would sit in these lectures and I would hear all of this stuff about how diets don't work and the harm that they cause. And then the end of the lecture is, but we still have to help people lose weight. So thank God we have medications and surgery, right? And that never sat well with me. And so I actually stopped coaching for a while to try and figure it out. One of the things that had happened in Weza, in my coaching business, is I seemed to attract a lot of women who struggled with binge eating disorder or just binge eating practices in general. And so I again did the doctor thing and I went and got training specifically in treating binge eating disorder. And the primary foundation is that you have to stop dieting if you want to heal binge eating. And something in that message really triggered with me. And I realized, you know what, I am perpetuating the problem and I am causing women harm by preaching weight loss. It's instead time for me to meet women where they're at, teach them that doesn't matter what body you live in, you are valuable as a woman, you're valuable as a human being. And if you have health goals, we can absolutely reach those goals without weight loss being the means to get there. It didn't make sense for me to preach something that fails us time and time again and leaves us believing it's our fault when we don't lose the weight for good. You know what I mean? And so now I am in this beautiful space where I'm able to help women feel at home in their body, heal their relationship with food. So they're not like I was, constantly worrying about my weight and my body and what to eat, what not to eat. What do I do now that I eat this cake? Do I have to exercise 3 hours more to pay for it? Right, et cetera. So I'm happy to give women freedom from all of that. And then also teach them what we can do to have them live a very happy, healthy, long, vibrant life without weight loss being the necessary key to get there.
Well, of course I can relate to every single bit of that, right? Right. Someone who has been on a very similar journey. I think the thing I want to circle back to first is when we talk about what the diet culture pushes and what we hear out there, we are thrown message after message after message that you can't be healthy unless you're thin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As a medical doctor, talk to me about that.
So that is categorically untrue. 100% untrue. You 100% cannot determine the health of a person by looking at their body's size or shape. Absolutely not. Are there people in bigger bodies who are unhealthy? Yeah, of course. Are there people in, you know, straight size, thin bodies that are unhealthy? Yes, of course. Right. The point is our health is not determined by our size. Plain and simple.
So even if you're, if somebody is obese, do you think they still can be healthy?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, but first of all, how are you defining obese?
Yeah, right.
Because that's
by old, antiquated. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, we in medicine traditionally use the BMI or body mass index as a measure of this, which even now the American Medical Association has come out to say that this is a measurement that is not only inaccurate, it's harmful. But this is what we have right now in medicine and in the research to define it. And a couple of decades ago, the CDC decided arbitrarily to change the cutoff of the BMI, who's overweight and who's not. And all of a sudden, overnight, a million more Americans were considered overweight when they weren't the day before. And what's ironic about all of this is that the way the definitions of overweight and obesity stand now, the people who live the longest and are the healthiest are in the overweight category. So that's one thing to continue to consider. At the extremes of the BMI, so people who have, you know, very, very high body weights, yes, there are some additional risks there, but not everybody, right? The point is, if you're in a higher body, that doesn't guarantee you're also going to be sick.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to ask that because you obviously have the credentials to back your opinion in this case. So I think it's important to put that out there for people to at least think about it from a different perspective than what they've been hearing.
Well, and the funny thing is you have to remember doctors are also trained within the same diet culture. And I learned nothing about any of this in medical school. I had 1 hour of nutrition lectures, and that was more on how to feed people through the IV when they're in the ICU, right? Didn't learn how to coach patients through healthy diet or anything else. And a lot of times the answer was just weight loss without any explanation, you know, as to why behind that. That's changing now. You know, the medical curriculum is changing and doctors are starting to learn, but the message still is, you know, your knee hurts, lose weight.
Yes.
You know, you have sleep apnea, lose weight.
Yeah, it's always the first message.
Right? And that is absolutely not always the right answer. Right. In fact, it rarely is the right answer. Yeah.
Let's go back to your own journey and when that script sort of flipped for you and you made the decision that you were going to let go of the actual weight loss and mm-hmm. you were going to kind of settle in more to you as a holistic being and accept who you are and your body as it is and work on all your larger goals. What was the most difficult part of that transition for you? Because the chatter that comes with all this programming that we've had for years, it's like high volume all the time. So you would have had to work on that as well to be able to kind of shut that down, right? And I bet it still comes back sometimes, but tell us a little bit about that specific part of the journey and kind of really making that switch.
Yeah. So it was not easy. Mm. It was probably one of the hardest things that I've ever done because the message is so loud and clear that I need to lose weight. And I was also getting this message from my own family doctor, from my colleagues. And I'm not just a fat woman, I'm a fat doctor, which, you know,
is quote unquote worse,
has its own set of expectations around me. And so the desire to lose weight for me is largely gone, but I still have moments where I want to lose weight because it would make my life so much easier.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I fit in airplane seats, you know, I fit in chairs, and I can buy clothing still in regular women's clothing stores, but, you know, it's not always easy. And there are moments when I wish I were thinner so I wouldn't have to deal with this outright weight discrimination that I experience. But I think, I feel funny kind of admitting this, but I think the thing that really helped me was perimenopause, actually. So I started my perimenopausal symptoms around the same time that I was beginning this transition to losing the need for weight loss. And, you know, I don't know if you're there yet, but my God, your body throws you surprises all of the time in the perimenopausal journey. And I chose to approach this phase of my life with acceptance and curiosity rather than trying to fight against it, right? And I had lots of reasons for that. Mostly, I'm a busy woman. I got a lot on my plate. What I don't need is to spend time stressing out about what's happening with my body. So I made this decision to go with the flow. And with that came this necessity for me to just accept where my body is at and accept that it's going through lots of changes right now. And, you know, I can do some things to manage some of the symptoms, but I can't stop my body from going through this transition. And what that translated to in real life for me was taking care of my body in a little bit of a better way, having a little bit more respect for my body, treating it with kindness, and having compassion when I'm having like a really low energy day or like a super heavy period or, you know, a hot flashy day where I, you know, life is just not going to go the way I wanted it to. Allowing myself to go through that with some grace, just kind of translated into the whole weight thing. And so it made it easier for me to accept my body where it's at and not try to force it into a container that it's just not meant to be in at this phase of my life. So this journey had really helped me. If I were to tell listeners what the key was, I think it really truly was just accepting where my body was at right now and giving myself some grace to let myself be there.
Yeah, when you were talking, that's what was going through my head. It's all about acceptance. Mm-hmm. That's the first step mm-hmm. of it, is just acknowledging what this body actually does for you. It allows us to, most of us, to walk, to live, to, you know, breathe, to interact, to have fun, to do lots of things. And even those with limitations, and learning to accept that we're grateful for that.
Right. And I just want to clarify, it's acceptance, not love,
yeah.
right? So this is one of the things that drives me a little crazy about the body positivity movement is that, you know, you can't just snap your fingers and all of a sudden love your body. I don't think that's a realistic goal for any of us to have, especially if you've made a career out of hating your body over the course of your lifetime, right? There's a difference between loving your body and accepting your body. And I think acceptance has to come first. And I like to use the word body respect as well, because even if I don't like my body, I can still treat it with respect. And from that action comes the acceptance and perhaps even liking your body or parts of it a little bit, right? And I like to make that distinction because it's not possible for any of us to open our eyes tomorrow morning and suddenly love the body that we live in. It just doesn't happen that way.
I really love that distinction. And you made me think about almost like thinking about it as a coworker that you may not necessarily be friends with or wouldn't hang out with outside of work, but you have respect for them. They do their job and you can see that good in it, mm-hmm. right? And then maybe to your point, you might come to find there's certain parts of them that you really do like, but
yes.
you don't have to like want to be their best friend. They're not like, you know? So yeah, acceptance versus love or even heavy light.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's really makes sense to bring a distinction between the two. I want to move to something that I think you employ as part of your practice, which is intuitive eating.
Sure.
I think most of my listeners have a basic understanding of intuitive eating, what it means, how to practice it. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think some of the most or the biggest misconceptions are around intuitive eating, or where do people go, you know, quote unquote, wrong with intuitive eating?
Yeah. The number one mistake people make is assuming it means you can eat whatever the hell you want in whatever quantities you want, whenever you want. That is absolutely not what it is, right? So intuitive eating really does make the distinction between eating from a place of physical hunger versus eating from a place of emotional hunger or mouth hunger that I like to call it, right? And so intuitive eating is really about tuning in to what your body is requesting of you in any moment. And this is not necessarily just having to do with food, but asking, does my body need rest right now? Does my body need movement right now? Does my body need connection with another right now? What does my body need? And acknowledging that when you are hungry, it is a true act of self-care to eat when you are physically hungry and to stop when you feel satisfied, when you've had enough. And part of this is eating what your body is asking for. And I think this is where the confusion comes in, is people will say, but all I ever want to eat is, you know, cookies and chips and salt and sugar and, you know, the things that are going to make me fat. And that's the second misconception, that I'm going to gain a lot of weight with intuitive eating because all I'm going to eat is donuts and cookies. And intuitive eating is complex. There are 10 different pillars that we address when we're embracing this concept of intuitive eating. And one of those involves making peace with food. So a lot of the reasons why we're wanting all of the, you know, sugary stuff and the salty stuff and the fatty stuff all of the time is because we've been restricting them or denying ourselves of them for so long. And the natural response, this is very physiological, is when we are doing that, we're in a scarcity mindset and the body will do whatever it can to get as much of those things because it truly believes it's never going to be able to have them again, right? And so we get cravings and we get these intense desires. And so once you start allowing these foods into your life, the drama around them goes away. And what most people find, and it doesn't take long, for some people it's a couple weeks, for others maybe it's a few months, but after that time period you come to a place where your body is naturally wanting healthier food. And when it does want, you know, some of the foods that we will traditionally define as unhealthy for us, it's you just need a little bit to be satisfied and then you move on and you end up having a very natural, balanced diet because of it. But I think the challenge with intuitive eating is to separate all of these pieces and to truly understand what physical hunger feels like for you and what it means to honor that. And from my own journey through learning and embracing intuitive eating, I think it's a really difficult thing to do alone, which is why I have the coaching business, right? To help guide women through this. So that's certainly the biggest mistake I see people making, is assuming it's just eating whatever you want, whenever you want it. And that's actually not what intuitive eating is.
I love that you threw in there the part about nourishing your body with whatever it needs, mm-hmm. meaning it could be rest, it could be activity, it could be interaction, mm-hmm. because I don't hear that often when we're talking intuitive eating. And I do think it's all about being in tune with yourself and your mm-hmm. body, right? And so, I mean, the biggest step in trying to go from emotional eating to true hunger is being in tune enough to know the difference.
Like, yes.
What am I feeling right now, right? Taking mm-hmm. a minute to notice that. Mm-hmm. And I think for many of us that have dealt with this for years and years and years, you lose that. We're very out of touch with what real.
We are very out of touch. You know, someone said once that we're all a bunch of walking heads, right? That we're just disconnected from our bodies. And of course, we overuse food, or we use food for reasons other than hunger yeah. when we're disconnected that way, right? And, you know, one thing I like to point out, emotional eating is actually normal. We all do this. There is a reason there is the cliche in the movies of the woman who's just broke up with her boyfriend eating the tub of ice cream on the couch, yeah. right? There's a reason why that this is actually a natural, normal thing. The difference is, right, if somebody who has a normal relationship with food understands its place, versus those of us who don't have a healthy relationship with food, we over rely on food to provide the soothing and the comfort in
everything
in a much bigger way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In all the spots, yeah. right. Whenever.
In all the spots. Yeah.
In all
yeah.
the spots. Mm-hmm. Good mm-hmm. point.
And that actually just leads to a second piece of intuitive eating that I think is often overlooked in popular culture. And that is the importance of doing the emotional work, because a lot of the times we're turning to food because emotions just feel too big and we don't know how to handle them in any other way. And sometimes the safest thing is food. And sometimes we will still need food until we're able to learn how to take care of ourselves in other ways, right? And so I think the general public confuses intuitive eating with attuned eating, right? So attuned eating is just that act of tuning into your hunger, eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full. Intuitive eating is a bigger philosophy that encompasses all of these other components.
Yeah. And I think all of them are necessary to really make the difference and switch.
Agreed.
Talk to me a little bit about a weight neutral self-care.
Yes. I love this concept of weight neutral self-care. So let's just break this down, right? Because we have the weight neutral piece, we have the self-care piece. When we say weight neutral, what we mean is your weight isn't part of the picture, right? So for example, I practice weight neutral medicine, which means I will not weigh you. I will not ask you about your weight. I will not blame any of the symptoms that you have on your weight. I will treat you.
All right, wait, can we pause? Everybody wants to come comfort to you for this.
You know what? If you Google weight neutral doctors and your state, there are actually directories of physicians.
For real?
There are, absolutely.
I've never heard of that. That's fantastic.
I will give you links so that you can have them in your show notes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah? And so that's the weight neutral piece. Okay. Self-care is more than, you know, pedicures and bubble baths, right? Self-care is what we were talking about before. It's tuning in and giving your body exactly what it needs, right? So that means sleeping when it's tired, moving when it needs to move, connecting with other people when that's what you need, eating when you're hungry, right? Self-care is giving yourself really what you need in the moment. And the problem, as I see it, with modern women is we wear so many hats and there are so many demands placed upon us under each of those hats that we wear that we absolutely come last in the list of priorities. So much to the point where 9 times out of 10, when I ask a woman, what do you actually need right now? They can't tell me.
100%.
Right. And so, you know, part of this is really taking some time to sit down and tune into your body and feel into your body and start practicing asking yourself, what do I really need right now? Do I need water? Do I need to get up and stretch? Do I need to keep working? Like what's my body pulling me to do right now? So often today, when women think they're doing self-care, they're doing things that they think they need to do to make their body look better, right? This is where the pedicures come from. This is where, you know, self-care to people might mean I'm going to exercise more so I can lose a little bit of weight, or I am going to, you know, only eat vegetables for the next, you know, 60 days. So when your self-care practices are coming from a place of changing your body in some way, that is not self-care, that is self-torture. So when I talk about weight neutral self-care, I'm talking about doing the things for your body that it needs to feel healthy, energetic, vibrant, and alive, and not to simply mold your body into something that you think it needs to be.
I love that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I do also agree that for many of us, especially when we're first starting on some of this work, it's very difficult to tune into what you actually need. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the work, right? That really is part of the work. I always tell people, if you can learn to take the pause, at least when you know, when you feel like you got to eat or you're not sure what's going on, just take a pause and start having that moment. And then the next step can be kind of tuning into it. Right.
Right. And so that is so key. Practice is really what's required here, because for this to work, you have to trust that your body is going to talk to you, and your body has to trust that you're going to listen, right? And until that relationship is solid, you might not hear the messages, right? And so when I was first learning to do this, I literally set an alarm on my phone for every hour. I'm not kidding. Every hour when my alarm would go off, I would just stop and take a breath and say, what do I need right now? And it took a long time. Like, I'm talking in the order of a couple of months before I started understanding what I need right now. And then it probably took me months longer to allow myself to go ahead and give that to me, right? So I work almost full time as an emergency physician. I'm like a 0.8, right? And so I use the rest of the time to run my business. And that means I don't have a lot of time to run my business. And so I have it in my head that on the couple days a week that I have, I am going to sit down on my desk as soon as I wake up in the morning, and I'm going to go until I can't go anymore so I can get everything done. And if I don't get things done, I feel a lot of stress. And what I learned through this process is my body actually needs to get up and stretch every hour. I need water every hour. My brain needs a break every couple of hours. And, you know, it was hard for me to let go of the standards I thought I had to meet to make my business work, to actually honor my body. And can I tell you, like, after I mastered this, I'm so much more productive, even though I'm probably working half the amount of time, because I'm giving my body what it needs. I'm like, I go to bed at 9:30 at night. I'm like a freaking old lady, but it's like, I'm up at 5:30 in the morning, energized and ready to go, right? It's like, I always thought I was a night owl. Turns out I'm not. When I'm listening to my body, I'm actually a morning person. So
I'm dying listening to you, because I posted something just about just last weekend. I too, like, this was a big lesson for me. And most of the listeners know I have a full-time, regular, normal job, and I do this on the side. And it takes time, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to squeeze it in, and I have grandkids. I also have a very busy life. And so I used to feel the pressure. There was nothing about downtime. There wasn't a thing called downtime. You just didn't have it.
Yep.
And last weekend, and you know, I've been doing some work now for a couple of years, so I've gotten way better at that. And last weekend, I was coming down with something, and I got up on Saturday and I had this, you know, I was supposed to do all these things to catch up, get ahead, do a bunch of podcast episode editing and all that stuff. And I said, I think I'm going to lay on this bed and do nothing today. And I literally laid on the bed Saturday. And I also had a big thing going on Sunday. I laid on the bed Saturday and I did almost nothing all day.
Good for you.
And it was okay. And what was astonishing is I didn't feel that constant, oh my gosh, I should go do something to be productive like that. But that took months and months and months and months of mm-hmm. reinforcing mm-hmm. that. So I think that's important to let people know.
Well, you know what? If listeners need help, Dr. Tubman hereby writes a permission slip
yes.
for every woman to take rest and enjoy it guilt-free.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard to get used to doing that. But people need to take that step and practice it. Just practice it. Little bits in time of not doing anything and getting comfortable doing nothing.
Absolutely. And this is another gift of perimenopause, by the way. Because there are days...
The gift that keeps on giving?
There are days where there's just literally nothing in the tank. And I yeah. can't imagine how miserable I'd be right now if I forced myself to push through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit. I'm looking at my cheat sheet for a minute because I want to get this right. So you have a prompt. If you woke up and weight didn't matter, what would your life look like?
Mm-hmm.
And you put that out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I read it, I found that extremely interesting. How do you use that with folks? I mean, what kind of reaction to that do you get?
So the reaction surprises me because I don't get one.
Ah.
Like I will ask this of people and women do not know.
Yeah.
Women don't know what they want for their lives.
That is true.
And this goes beyond the weight piece, right? And it's true that someone women will say to me, I have been so focused on my body and my weight and the food and all of it for so long that I don't even know what I want for my life anymore. Other women will say, I've been a mom and a wife and, you know, an employee and this, and there's just no space for me to dream for myself, right? And it breaks my heart that women don't dream anymore. They just don't allow themselves to dream anymore. And so where this question, though, actually came from was Starbucks. So I was standing in a Starbucks line waiting for my chai latte, and there were two women in front of me and they were chatting with each other. So they were both in bigger bodies and one had been complaining of knee pain. The other said, why don't you go to physiotherapy? And the woman said, I'm just going to lose weight first and then I'll try. And in my mind, I was flabbergasted. It's like, why not try physiotherapy right now, right? And it just it occurred to me to ask her, like, what if I could press a magic button and there was no such thing as a thin ideal, right? That, you know, you could be tall or short and it doesn't matter. You could be thin or fat and it doesn't matter. Like what if your weight truly did not matter? What would you do for your knee right now? Right. And because this woman was making decisions from her body size and not from what her body actually needed. And I have to say it, doctors are to blame for this because, you know, 9 times out of 10, the doctor's going to say, well, you probably don't exercise at all because you live in a bigger body. So what you truly need is exercise. And after listening to these women chat for 7 minutes in Starbucks, she was an avid hiker and probably had an overuse injury in her knee. What she didn't need was more exercise. What she also didn't need was to lose weight. What she needed was a little bit of physiotherapy. Right. And so it's a great question to ask yourself when you're talking about self-care as well, is like, you know what, if my weight truly didn't matter to me or the world, what would I do for myself right now? Would I wear the bikini on the beach? Would I want photos with myself and my grandkids?
I love that question. I just got goosebumps. You couldn't see them because I don't believe in coincidences. And on my vision board, which is right above my head, there's a big thing in the middle that says dare to dream.
Yeah.
And my listeners know that I am somebody that forgot how to dream.
Yeah.
Life got busy. Lots going on. I was so busy doing and being and producing that I forgot how to dream. So this year I'm focused on learning to dream again. So I'm so glad you brought that up, but it's neat that you specifically hit on that. And it's also going to get me to look at that as I'm dreaming, as I'm thinking of things, I am going to force myself to think, are you limiting that because of a size? Or is this really the dream you would would dream. And most, again, most of my listeners know that I've lost a bunch of weight, but I'm still in a bigger body than a lot of people. So that still comes into play. So yeah, I think it's a really great question to make sure you're thinking about. Great prompt.
Yeah. Do you want a second great question?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. My second favorite question is, will this nourish me or will this punish me?
Yes.
And this question goes beyond caloric content of food, right? This really embraces this concept of self-care. Is it going to nourish my soul, my body, my mind, my heart? Or is it going to punish me to continue at this job I hate, to fight with my partner, to eat the ice cream, to wear a bathing suit on the beach, right? And, you know, this question really asks you to take a good look inside and ask, what do I really need right now? Right. And this question came to me on a beach day with a bunch of friends, and everybody had decided to go to ice cream. And I literally had a pack of rice cakes. I'm not even kidding you. I had a pack of like rice cakes to eat. And I thought, no, I'll just like stand off to the side and eat my rice cakes. And I thought, this is punishing me.
100%.
Like, there is nothing wrong with me having a scoop of ice cream with my friends on this beautiful hot day on the beach. And it was more nourishing in every way for me to just enjoy ice cream than to sit and eat rice cakes out of a plastic bag on the beach on a hot summer day, right? And there are lots of times where I ask myself that question, and it's no, actually, the ice cream will not nourish me today. I'm not really hungry. I don't really need it. What I actually need is rest. That's why I wanted the ice cream to perk me up. So I'm just going to go take a 10-minute, you know, sit outside in the sun and then come back to my workday, right? So I love those two questions together of like, what would I do if weight didn't matter to me or to anybody else? And will this nourish me or will this punish me?
Yeah, I often talk about those same things. The second one, doing more and being around people more that fill you up than deplete you. So same question, really, right?
But same question. Yeah.
And it certainly goes beyond food. Great example with the ice cream. And you hit on, sometimes it's relationships. And sometimes there are relationships you have to be in, say they're family members, et cetera.
100%.
But you can put boundaries up and you can limit your exposure to it, right? And put your little bubble on so that it doesn't eat away at your own personal space and your personal attitude. So I think those are great questions. Thank you for sharing them with us. I want to talk about fat shaming ourselves. We can all relate a little bit, but what does that look like to you? How does that show up?
In my life personally?
Or people that you work with?
Or in general?
Yeah, in general, either way.
So it's all of the comments of, does my butt look fat in this? I'm too fat for anyone to ever love me. I need to lose weight before I can apply for that job. I can't wear a bathing suit on the beach. I can't be in family photos. I'm too fat. All of this is fat shaming ourselves. And the problem is, a lot of the times we just don't see it. So when I'm teaching people about this concept, I like to talk about internal versus external, or intrinsic versus extrinsic biases, right? So extrinsic ones are the ones we're aware that we're having. When we're very much aware that we're afraid to go out in public because of our bodies, or we're reluctant to say yes to be a bridesmaid because we'll be the only fat one in the bridal party. Like, these things that we're aware of are easier for us to identify and to manage. But we can have these implicit or intrinsic biases that operate on the subconscious level. We're not necessarily aware that we have them. And these are the ones that are so much harder to manage. These are these deep-seated beliefs that we're not good enough because we live in a bigger body that feel so true, we don't even question them. And that's the harder bit. So one exercise that can be so illuminating is, if you just Google Harvard implicit bias tests and go to their website, they actually have one for anti-fat bias. And many people who live in bigger bodies score tremendously high on this. And of course we do, right? Because we hear the messages from the day we're born that thin is beautiful. And, you know, as soon as mom starts questioning your tummy getting a little pudgy or somebody says something to you at school, right? Very early, we get these messages and we internalize them. And, you know, it's not so easy to really overcome those for ourselves.
So a lot of things that I thought of there, but I can so relate, as much as I hate to say it, the fact that when we do those things, we're not only solidifying these stories we have about ourselves in our heads, right, by repeating all this stuff, but if we have young girls in our households, we're also sending them the exact messages we want to get away from.
We are. Yeah.
And I feel a little bit torn because I know personally I've done this to my girls growing up because I've sent those messages about myself. But also, it's really hard to see one of your children, grandchildren, etc., and not worry. And I get where that comes from. It can come from a place of love because you don't want them to go through some of the same things that you went through.
Mm-hmm.
But that's mm-hmm. not helping create a good relationship with food or with body.
No.
So you have to recognize, even though it's coming from a place of love, even though, it's, you have to separate and break away from those things, doing those things, thinking those things.
You do. You do. And I also just want to emphasize that it goes both ways, right? I mean, you and I both live in bigger bodies. And so this is what we're focusing the conversation on. But the same thing happens. I speak to many women who have, you know, in fact, I had this beautiful conversation with another physician, an endocrinologist, a couple of weeks ago, who says she was only ever recognized for her thinness. It didn't matter what else she accomplished in her life. Her glory was that she was thin. And she feels invisible because all anybody ever sees is this accomplishment of her body, right? And so it's exactly the same thing, right? Or you think about people who live in straight size bodies who are so afraid of gaining weight that they're living under the same, self-imposed oppression, right? Because they can't fully live their life because they're afraid, you know, if I enjoy my son's birthday cake, I'm going to get fat. And then what, right? And so this truly affects all of us.
I think it's great to really think about that as we start winding down. It really can go the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably never a good time or reason to say something about someone's body. I mean,
yeah.
In what scenario? I'm thinking of my own experiences, but if you say to somebody in your family says to you, wow, you look great. You lost a lot of weight. Or,
yeah.
Wow, you look like you put on a few pounds. Like, no matter what, it's not a good idea. It's not going to end well. So just
no. Well, no. And you know what? It goes back to, you can never make interpretations on a person's life based on what their body looks like. You just simply cannot, right?
Yes.
The classic example, I interviewed a woman for my podcast, you know, quite some time ago, who truly got compliments on her weight loss as she was undergoing cancer treatments. Right. And
awful.
Right. It is awful. And you just do not know what's going on in a person's life. In fact, this physician I spoke to a couple weeks ago, when she was trying to lose some baby weight, she literally ate 300 calories a day for months.
Wow.
And her doctor said, well, whatever you're doing, keep on doing it. And this is the moment where she broke down because she's like, I cannot exist like this. I've got nothing left to give. Right. But we make assumptions based on what people's bodies look like. And that is what we should never do.
And that is what the whole thing is about. This is your whole gig.
Yeah.
Thrive beyond size.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what your size is. Work on your whole self.
Exactly.
Because I know that's one thing that, you know, you talk about.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, get away from the focus on the weight. Work on your whole self. And that's healthy mind, body, soul, everything.
You got it.
And it's that whole package.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to have talked to you today. I could probably keep talking to you for about 3 hours.
But I know, right?
Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge and your own personal experiences with us. We will put all your links out there for people so they can check you out, check out your work, your sites.
Sounds good.
Maybe some that can use some extra coaching can come look you up, and definitely check out the podcast, Thrive Beyond Size.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Message in the Middle with Marianne. If you enjoyed the podcast, please take a minute to share it and write a review, as it helps bring new listeners to our audience. If you'd like to keep the conversation going between episodes, please join us at Facebook group Message in the Middle with Marianne.